Mr. Douglas Reel, 12. So, of course, you were here. You were in a foreign country again.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Did the climate present you with any problems at all?
No. No, not really, no. It was dry, but as I say, up to then we had plenty of lovely fresh juicy oranges, which quench your thirst. They were lovely, big oranges, nice. And your company commander bought them for you. You know, you'd go into the town or wherever you got them from, and as I say, bring them back. And he more or less controlled how many you got. You couldn't, you know, you could only afford so many anyway to start with. But but you know, it's about a dozen a day, no more than a dozen a day. You could order a dozen, but no more.
What were you doing to fill your days in? What were you doing to fill your days in? What was your daily routine like?
As I say, we had a route march. We had parades, and you know, every morning, see, you were clean, washed, shaved, weapon inspection, and shoe boots inspection, and things like that. Make sure that. And apart from that, I think, you know, there wasn't a lot we did. We had a route march to take out, just to get fit, get your legs and land legs in. And didn't really do a lot apart from that. Dig latrines and things like that, and the normal duties. But nothing like that.
Were you told what was going to happen? Was there any instruction on what was going to happen, where you were going?
No, as far as we were concerned, there was no war on. there was nothing, just it was peaceful. Because, as I say, the fighting had progressed beyond that by then. It had, Americans had, they landed before us. They took the brunt of it, like, at the beginning. But once they got the Free French, they weren't French, and of course France had capitulated, but Pétain was, you know, as far as they were concerned, they were being invaded. But eventually they did give up. No, they realised, said, well, France is gone and there's nothing, and these people are going to leave France eventually, fighting Germans. The Germans invaded France. But Pétain had sent orders out, I think, you know, that France was still France. And he had a sort of a free hand, the Germans weren't. But eventually they accepted the fact that France had been invaded, and the French Foreign Legion as well. They fought against them at first, but then they came over on our side.
Did you have any free time whilst you were here in this particular area?
Oh, yes. That's it. We wandered around. Looked at the orange groves. There wasn't much to do or much to see. And as I was to say, we were warned not to have anything to do with the women, not even to look at them. Because the husbands, according to their religion, were Muslims, you see. And said if you look at them, the husband will give them a good hide, just for us looking at them. And said they'll kill them if we approached them in any way. You know, they'll probably kill them. If they had to start talking to or anything. But one of them, I didn't see many. There's a few. But what I seen, they were all covered up. Just had pale, just see their eyes. That's all black all over.
did the men feel? What was morale like at this time?
Fairly good. Fairly good. We got over the voyage, you know, and we had plenty of interest. As I say, we were in a foreign country, different customs, different people. And everything was strange and new. And the weather was good, so morale was pretty good.
And you were still in the 16th Durhams at this time?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Where was the battalion? How was it spread out in this area?
Well, I couldn't say exactly, I just knew where we were. It's supposed to be spread out in a sort of an area. Different people, different. But you're just concerned more or less with your own company. In the cases like that, you don't.
And you were still in C Company, wasn't it? Was it C Company you were in?
C Company. Yes. Captain Miller.
Uh-huh. Do you remember which brigade you were in and which division?
I don't know, I can't remember. Of course, the Durham's in 151 brigade. What's the 150 brigade? I'm not sure. We did have a flash shown on my shoulders, and I can't remember now. Can't remember. I don't know what division it would be.
Did you have any other contact with any other soldiers from any other units whilst you were there?
Any other
soldiers, Americans or
other
units in the area?
No, not up to then. No, they were all. Apart, we were away from many. If there was any there, we weren't never seen any.
Where did you move to from there? I think you said you were there about a week.
Yes, at least a week. And then we entered and went up to Bizerta, Bourne. I remember Bourne. I wasn't sure whether Bourne was still in the enemy hands, or they were still fighting for it, or whether it had gone. But we went up to Bizerta, and that's where we detrained. I think it was Bizerta. And then from there we moved up into the police gap where some mountains, very mountainous country it was, very mountainous. And we took over from the Green Howards, I think it was, on the front line.
Can you remember what that area was called that you moved into?
It hadn't a name, just Bizerta. Bizerta was the town where the supplies us from, things like that. Just the rest was just more or less desert. We took over from the Green Howards. He showed me the trenches, you know, and this, that, the other, shouldn't it? And I remember he said, "That's it in China. This is lane, this is where we stand too. This is in," and he said, "That tank down there," he says, "don't go near it," because he says, "it's booby trapped." There was a couple of tanks that had been bashed up, and of course there was big mountains and we were overlooked by them. The Germans were in them, that's where they were, so that but it was a fairly quiet sector at the front, you know, there wasn't a lot of.
So where were you actually living, and what were your positions like? Can you describe them?
Well, it was a railway line, and we're on a sort of a hill, and there was a tunnel through the hill, railway line through, and at the front of the tunnel, the German side of the tunnel, I'd say, was a truck full of stones and that, which would block the front, more or less. And C Company was in the tunnel. We that was our sector of the line, C Company. My platoon was the centre. And had a platoon each side of us. We had trenches just more or less on the crest of the hill. You could see the Germans. We're a long way away, of course, and I used to look through the field glasses at them, and the artillery. They promised me five rounds if I spotted any movement. So I used to watch, and they had their precision. You could see them through binoculars, you know, sometimes moving. They were, of course, much higher than us, higher up a mountainous country it was, and they had trenches and come so that you could see them. The railway went through the hill, and the road went around the side of the hill, and there was these tanks in front, and there was a hut along the road at the side of the road, and the Arabs had some sheep. They were grazing sheep. Didn't seem to affect them. And the shells coming over, you know, if they saw us move, of course, they opened up. I got the shell fire coming over. It didn't seem to affect the Arabs. They were queer people. They used to occasionally come among you, and we used to bargain, buy eggs off them, you know, if we could.
What was your accommodation like? Where were you living?
We lived in this tunnel through the day. You know, I had an outpost at the forward edge of the hill. There was very little cover. It was the only place where I could really sight in a forward outpost. It was just room for two men, really. And of course, when they used to go there before daylight. And they were there till after dark. And I said, tell them, whatever you do, keep your head down. Don't expose yourself and give your position away, because I said, they'll shell you. And they had to stay there, of course, till after dark. Cause I remember one lad, he was a company clerk. But he had to take his turn. You know, he took your turn, and it wasn't very pleasant there. So it would fill with water, that bloody trench thing. Slip trench was not much. And, you know, you were uncomfortable. You couldn't do your business in the trench. You know, if you had to go on, that was it. And I remember I had to connect with the phone, of course. And they started shelling, and I remember the company clerk. He wasn't used. She'd never been in the army. She'd never been in the army. Never been anything else. He wasn't a fighter, and he panicked. And he was going to come out. I says, "You'll never make it. I said, you'll be killed." Nah, stop down on it. I started singing a song, and I started singing the song. And anyway, I got him calmed down a bit. But if he jumped out that trench, tried to get back, no chance. But I got him calmed. But it used to be awkward, because then you get a bit frustrated through the night, and in the morning, you'd be watering that trench, and it'd be a fine film of ice. It's cold at night. Warm through the day, it was lovely. Bloody cold at night, though. I've had one or two nights in it myself, like, you know. To go and see that it was all right, clean it up through the night. They'd take patrols out as far as the tanks and beyond. Recce patrols, just, you know. And it's all quiet. Never met any opposition. I never heard any. Just these Arabs in this hut. You'd hear them talking. in the dark, like, you know, to ask God out of the dark. And we didn't touch the tanks, like. And I remember when there was a mannequin came, great big fella he was, great big woolly fur coat on, like a big bear. And he was the American Rangers. And so he sent a patrol out, because I was a formal position, you see, he's come through my platoon. And he sent this patrol, I got the leader of the patrol and told him, like, I says, when you got down there, I said, there's two tanks. I says, don't go any near them. I says, they will be trapped. And I says, they stink. I says, there's dead bodies in there. I says, if you eliminate bother much, I says, there's not much steam, but I says, just keep your eyes about you and ears. So off they went, and they were away about an hour or half, to come back. And he went mad, this bloody officer there. Oh, you come back here, nothing. I want a prisoner. I want this. Oh, he said, oh, you bloody get out there and get me a prisoner. Well, I thought, the bloody man's daft. And off they had to go again. So off they went. And they went, you know, quarter mile past these tanks up there. And all of a sudden, there was such a bloody noise. Grenades firing. Machine gun firing, all sorts. And then about 20 minutes after, they came up the hill back. And he was satisfied. Al had gone, they'd went and chucked a few grenades and opened up and made a noise. And I said, they were outnumbered. There's any amount of them, I couldn't, but we're lucky to get away. You know, they told him some tale, and really satisfied. And off they went. Typical, I says, typical bloody Yankees. Typical Yankees. But they were Rangers. I suppose they were good fighters eventually, but a lot of them had never been in action, you know, I suppose. Because they were further over, like, further behind us and that. But twice the Germans had. They just dropped everything and ran. Left everything, all the equipment. Jumped into jeeps and away like hell. And then the British troops had to go and bring the Germans back again. That was before we got there, like. But twice that had happened, we were told. And we were took over when we went up. But it was fairly quiet when we were, like, it'd be a few shells going over and that. We sent one lad out for reconnaissance. He was a sniper. And I set him up, the gun up this hill on the left, right. Never heard Satan sound him anymore. I don't know what happened, the hell happened to him, whether he was captured, killed or what, but he never came back. I says, get up there and then observe. Just lie up a couple of days, but come back on the third day. Come back. Report, but never heard a sight sound from since. Could have been bitten by a snake. Anything. There's a lot of snakes there, poisonous snakes, you know.
Where was the rest of the battalion in relation to yourselves? You described the position you were at.
Well, it was a sort of a line, and you had your reserves as well, and headquarters back, the berserker and that. But we didn't have any to do with them. Like, you know, we just get our rations up and things like that.
What about communications? How did you communicate?
Well, I had a phone to me observation post. But apart from that, they did have the wireless sets, you know. But we didn't have that set. That was the signals section. We just had to stand to them on, of course, dawn and night, in case of an attack. But they never attacked us while we were in that sector of the line.
What was a typical day like then whilst you were there? You mentioned stand two. When was stand two? In the morning?
Mm-hmm.
What time would that be?
Dawn. Whatever time dawn was, 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock. It's a stand two in the trenches. Because that's the time when they attack.
And then what was a normal daily routine like after stand two?
Well, they got their breakfast. And of course, as usual, the man in the bloody front gets the rubbish as it comes up the line. The officers get the cream, and then the others get this, and then when he gets the front, you get bully. I never tired of bully. I like bully beef. It's come up in boxes, like, you know. And I made a latrine with the boxes for my company. And it got demolished with a shell, so I had to build it up again. It was just a made with ration boxes, so it could sit on rather than squat, you know, so like. But it was a bit more convenient than squatting.
Did you get hot meals?
Yes, you got a hot meal once a day.
And where did they come from?
From further back, I don't know where. The field kitchen further back. It came in containers, you know, and it was dished out. Each man got generally soup, hot soup. You'd get a soup once a day. Occasionally, you might get a bacon, you know, would be tinned but cooked, like, you know, get a bit of bacon and bread.
What about water?
Food, well, the food, the water, of course, came up that, and it was come up in containers again. You know, had to fill your water bottle up. You get your water bottle. You had your water bottle last year through the day, like. And there was tea, you was get tea coming up. But that was further back.
Who brought it up?
Well, Quartermaster Sergeant. Company Quartermaster Sergeant. He had his big burners, you know, formed with compressed blow of the flame. And his containers set along cooking potatoes and whatever. And then bring them up and dish them out by platoons, by sections.
How did you keep yourselves clean and tidy?
As best you could. So, got a petrol tin open. There are plenty of petrol tins available somehow. I could it open and use that. Wash yourself, face and hands, wash your body. No, during the afternoon when there's not much doing, step off and have a good wash.
How did you get rid of your rubbish? What did you do about that? Keeping
there wasn't any rubbish. Just have to come back. There wasn't any rubbish. You didn't create any rubbish. You got your issue with Army Farm Blanc. And it, of course, went into the history. you had to indent for these things, like, you know, you had to send a ration ammunition return in every day. You expend one round ammunition, you had to count for it.
So what sort of things were you doing during the daytime? After stand two, and you had your meal, what sort of things were you doing during the day?
Not much, really. Just take it easy. Play cards. As I say, you had your dinner, and then you couldn't go anywhere or anything like that. And of course, there were any shells you'd get in the trench. Start shelling you for no reason, whatever, or for some reason, probably see some movement. I had one man there, he was just a young lad, about 18 or 19, blew his finger off, and that was one of the things. He said he'd put his rifle behind the trench, and he reached out to get it, and he got hold of it by the muzzle to pull it, and he said that the grass or some must have got caught in the trigger. Well, this is why the head didn't the other, but it's safety catch on, isn't it? Of course, self-inflicted wound. So I don't know what happened to him. Our banners and what took him away, and I don't know what happened. Never heard. But he was on charge with self-inflicted wound. He said it was an accident, and I couldn't help it. He said, I went to get my rifle. It went off. Of course, I had the forms to fill in for expenditure of one round of ammunition. And the company commander, why the hell did it happen? This, you know, it could have been an accident. He could have done it on purpose. I don't know. I don't think he did himself. But I said, why didn't he have the safety catch on? I said, if he had your safety catch on, it couldn't have went off. Oh, he said, I cleaned it myself once before, but put it back on. Because the lad was upset, he did his hand was all powder burns, a finger missing. And that happened there. That was one thing. And apart from patrols and...
During the daytime, were there any specific duties that you had to do?
Not really. No, just as I say, I would lie with the binoculars, watching. And if I seen any movement, they were bringing the rations up. I'd get on the phone and artillery would send 2 or 3 shells over. Like no skipper. I enjoyed that. I killed a few men that way there, but they promised me they said, we'll give you 5 rounds. If there's any definite movement, give us the coordinates. So that was something for them to do. But there was quite a distance between, you know. From here to Stanley, at least. And of course, it was very mountainous terrain.
So about about half a mile.
I'd be all of that. Yeah. I'd be all of that, maybe more. And but they had the advantage because they were way up. They could spot us easy. But once we got over the edge of this little hill, it wasn't a mountain where we were, it was a hill. Got on the reverse slope of that, they couldn't see us. And he was safe from the shells there as well.
I was just going to ask how you protected yourselves from shell fire during the day. What did you do?
Get in the trench. Never lasted long. One shell landed right in front of this tunnel. I was in the tunnel and I think it was right in the dune summit. It was terrific. Bang! God, I thought I'd run up. It wasn't a very long tunnel, but the length of this street. And I run up like, and the one that landed right and hit this truck, Michelle. But they were all right, apart from a little bit of concussion, there was none of them hurt. I says, well, I says, you're lucky, but I said, you still have to. Because they're sleeping there, that it was in case of attack. That it was a weak point sort of thing to get in there. But I always had to be a man on duty there, on lookout. And of course, I had a man on two men on the outpost, just in case anything happened. Could come rolling in with tanks or anything. You know, you never knew what was going to happen. But it was a fairly quiet one. Never had any casualties apart from the lad who lost the finger.
I remember once
I seen a snake.
Sorry?
A snake. And this Arab was, oh, boy, said, they wouldn't have noticed the point of fastening where it was, but he wouldn't have noticed it. It was deadly. It wasn't a very big thing, but Must have been a poisonous snake. I remember that. That's another thing that I remember. But apart from, there wasn't a lot you remembered about it. It was quiet.
Did you have any problem with, I mean, just mentioning snakes, any other problems with things like lice or
no.
vermin?
No. No. No, we kept ourselves clean. We weren't in crowded conditions, you know, like it wasn't like being in the front line trench in the First World War.